Sat Sun with Maitreya, June 2nd, 2001.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the mission of Maitreya's Sat Sun. It's good to have all of you here with us. And may our number grow very, very large. Huge, huge. The whole Earth, the whole universe, the greater the number, the more energy and the power to God's work. And right now, our number is not huge, but many things are going to be happening, and a lot of things get done, and a lot of project is going on. All right, as usual, the question is there any new person in the audience that we will explain the great sign to them? It's that they have the priority in the satsangs, because the satsang is to get the message out to humanity. And so if there is any new person, let us go and speak up so we can explain the great sign first before we can start with other questions and other things that we're going to be doing here. Okay, I suppose that there's no new person in the audience there. Yeah, it's good to have you with us. I hope you enjoy the satsang today. And this is the place to be, because this is the full manifestation of God's revelation. Many things has been proven that what we have here is for all humanity, and all humanity should come and learn about this revelation. So being here is a great blessing, and this revelation is a great blessing to all of us. So we go to the questions that we send to the mission.
In the Universe of Man, Habit 1, verse 18 and 19, it says that outgoing prana becomes heedless desire, and ingoing prana becomes will. How can we keep the prana moving inward and prevent it from going outward?
Yes, it is a part of the Universe of Man. Universe of Man, that is the probably hardest book to fathom and understand. It has a lot of information and beautiful things in it, that if you understand, you really understand the whole universe, how it works, and how, you know, God has created, and how different level of consciousness are in the universe, and what is God, and what is the unconscious mind, and all that. So prana is really the energy, the raja guna in the universe. The universe is has seven levels or worlds, and the first level is the manifested world, the crudest part of the universe, is like a tama guna. The first level is tama, is manifested, is the universe, is crudest part of the world. And second is, after tama, is raja. Raja is energy that which creates the second level of the universe, which is the pranic state, or prana is the energy that brings the life force to the universe. And the third level, of course, is the mental, or the sattvic energy, which is the decision-making process of the universe. So like a kama is the chitta, which forms the what we see. We see the microphone, the chitta or crudest part forms the microphone, but he doesn't know anything what it is. So Rajaguna, his energy, takes the message microphone and sends it to the sattva. And sattva recognizes it, it says microphone. So the chitta or the crudest part of the mind, the only thing it does is it keeps the form from external world. Raja, if there was no raja or prana, there wouldn't be any movement, there wouldn't be energy in the universe. And the movement or the electricity is a kind of a raja, this energy, takes it and puts it to the intelligent part of the brain, and the intelligent part of the brain says it's a microphone. Now, what are we going to do with it? Okay. The decision comes in order to give it a 2-4 month old kid. He puts it in his mouth, you know, and if you give it to a kid who doesn't know what it is, it might just break it. But if you give it to a singer, he says, oh, I'm going to sing in it. Okay, so it depends upon your intelligence and your consciousness. You use that instrument, you know, according to where your consciousness is. It's the same thing in the world, in the life. You know, we go into the world, it's external to us. We see things. Chitta takes the form. Raja sends it to the intelligence, and then the intelligence says, okay, what are we going to do? If you are in the lower consciousness, you know, you make the decision based on the lower consciousness. If a beggar sees you, he says, oh, how can I get more money out of this person? If a thief sees you, he says, I'll pick up the pocket of this person. But if a godly person sees you, he says, how can I help this person to, you know, connect to God? So it depends upon your intelligence, that is how the decision will be made. So we can see that the tamaguna creates the external world or the manifested world for our body. Rajaguna become prana. Now, tamaguna external world receive rajaguna energy. How are we going to use this energy? Are we going to externalize it and chase our desires and wants and worldly thing? Then it become what? The very energy that can be directed internally and used to guide us to the higher things, just start guiding us outwardly. So the more energy we let out outwardly and directed to the world, the more this energy become what? Become desires, temptations, and our wants, and we want to fulfill our sensual, you know, desires, and that makes us go more and more to Maya, and after a while our energy becomes completely concentrated in what is in external out there that we can accomplish or have. So the second level in the world is the pranic world, which is energy. It depends how you use it according to your consciousness. And the third one is the lower mental world, that we use that to accomplish what is needed to be accomplished in the external world or manifested world. So if we are becoming very good at it, if we are absolutely tamasic, what are we going to do? The only thing we are really desiring is whether our physiological and safety is going to come. That's the only thing, you know. It's the next place, just like it. Christ was tempted with the first thing. Why? Make this a stone bread. Okay. That's the first desire of man. There is my next bread, next food, next, you know, shelter going to come. And the next temptation was you doubt, you know, the power of God, and you say, well, actually some people say that God doesn't even exist. Because they're so worldly that they really don't want to know God exists. Okay. So the temptation comes, which is the second level. It's the pranic, it's energy. And energy creates temptation. So your whole mind and the energy is going to go towards the heedless fulfillment of the desires. So your energy is going outwardly to the world. But you don't have much of intelligence how to manage them. You want them, but you don't know how to get them. The third level is the lower mental world, which you use that energy toward the external world, but you become wiser and wiser how to fulfill those desires. Okay? You become a successful person in the external world, and your desires are fulfilled because your lower mental world has developed in such a way you can use the energy to accomplish things that external world, you know, offer. You become what? A successful person, you become a lawyer, you become a doctor, you become a politician, you know how to make more money. body and fulfill your desire, but still you're going external. And then, but if you go a little higher, you go to the higher mental world, which directs your energy now from your third chakra to the higher chakra, to the fourth chakra, and fifth chakra, and sixth chakra, and higher energy, you start using your intelligence in understanding, why am I here? Where am I going? What's this life about? You know, why was it created? Is that here only I eat, drink, and sleep, and make children, and die? Is that the goal of my life? Is that all this universe is created, and I've been here for this only reason? That is when your higher mental level start questioning, you know, the reasons for your life. This is when you withdraw from the external world and you go toward the internal world. So your energy no longer is hideously going toward the outward thing, but toward the greater inside questions and inside calling that is calling you for something greater than just mundane life. That is that your energy starts being directed from external world to the internal world, and heedless desires become wisdom. You become a seeker, you become more away from Maya. You look for something greater than heedless desires and external world. So you start using the higher mental world. Okay? And because of that you get attracted to the, you know, knowing, you know, the reason for life and being here, and eventually you, you know, say, well, that could be some creator somewhere that have created me, put me here for a reason. Okay, so it's not asking, okay, do I have a reason to be here? Okay. But as far as, of course, everybody asks this question probably in their life, but when your energy going out, you ask it very little, maybe a couple of times in your life, or very few, even when you ask them. You don't really want to know the answer, because the answer might interfere with your desire from external world. Okay, so we can see that it said, many will be calm, few will be chosen. Why few? Okay, because most of the other ones are doing what? Are directing their energy outwardly. They want the world. Okay, they want, you know, the desire to be fulfilled. Okay. They have some wants, some reasons that external world become very important for them. Okay. So when you go to the higher mental world, you of course start, you know, going more inside and probably become more meditating and start meditating and awakening your spiritual forces to the higher chakra. You feel for the first time you reach the fourth chakra and experience the, you know, unconditional love and beauty of not being attached and being yourself and finding your own self of being so beautiful as it is. And then you go to the higher level, the fifth level, which is beyond this world. Okay? You then gain lots of knowledge of the, how the creation works, how the universe is, you know, working, you know, so beautifully. Okay. So you find something even more beautiful than what the external world offers you. So the luster of the external world just vanishes away. It's become very, actually you don't want it anymore as much because it doesn't have any affection to you. Because you find something more beautiful, just like Christ said, you know, the kingdom is like a jewel. You find the property that jewel is in, is buried in it. What do? You sell all other wealth to buy that property because you know that that jewel is buried in that land. That's exactly what happens if you really hit to the higher mental world and go beyond the higher mental world to the, you know, absolutely the fifth level of the creation or your being. This is beyond the sheets, which separates you from the rest of the universe. Okay? So when you reach there, of course, you know, you still are under influence of the external law. Tribunas is still dominating you. You go higher level, in the fifth level, you are absolutely in control of the tribunas and the world, and they're not going to affect you anymore at all. And that is when you experience the being touched with God. You know, you become one with God, and you can feel His presence and oneness with Him. And but of course, you see, you are in the body, and in seventh level, of course, you reach liberation or oneness completely with God. So you can see the energy. If there was no energy in the universe, was there any movement? No. What is our will? Our will is how to use the energy that God has given to us, isn't it? My will is to have a very nice house. What I do now? Because that is my will. That's my will. Really is the way we use to fulfill our desire, isn't it? You use the real to fulfill your desires. If my will is to have a beautiful house, then my energy, I use my energy toward what? That goal, toward that, what I want. What is a beautiful house? Is it something external? Yes, it is something external, okay? I want something out there that I'm going to put my will and energy. Are you thinking about God? Then you're putting your effort and working hard and making money and putting it away and going mortgage and then getting out. No, you're always thinking about that desire out there. Okay. So, if my goal is have the most beautiful family, okay, now what am I going to have to get a job, to work hard, to get a place to live and spend my time and energy to have a beautiful family. Sometimes at the end it doesn't work because the family falls apart. And so now, if I put my energy toward creation of the communities of life and God, if I bring like-minded people together and we be able to share with each other, can we have a beautiful house? It's much easier, isn't it? The more resources coming in from many people together, and you can put it and easily have a beautiful house without, you know, spending the rest of your life just having a beautiful house. Or having a family, if a family living in a community of life, and its family is supported with the community, it's not only a couple, but the six couples, even more, the whole community of life are supporting each family. That family stay together easier, and they become more a real good family. Or if only two people try to make a good family in the ocean of Maya. So we can see again, it depends, you know, where your consciousness is, you know, where your energy is going. Okay, so if your energy is just for yourself and thinking about you and worldly thing, and that's what you want, that's going to become a heedless desires, temptation, work, and probably never going to fulfill what your desires are. Okay? Because the problem with desire is when you fulfill one, what happens? It's going to be replaced with another one. Because you're going outward. Your energy is going outward. If one of them is fulfilled, are you going to be satisfied? You won't. Your energy is going that way, therefore it's going to be replaced with another one, with another one, with another one. And it's going to be a hopeless, unending quest for fulfilling something which is called Maya. Illusion is not going to be fulfilled. And what happens? Desires are directed to sensual wants, sensual gratification. Does the sensual gratification ever satisfy anyone? Have you ever seen anybody, someone says, I had enough of sensual desires, I really was fulfilled, you know, I'm done with it. Yeah. No, you won't. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. The people who follow just see, look at the world since 40s and 50s. They're going towards more sensual thing. And the early desire, the sensual desires are fulfilled, or they're finding a new way to, you know, fulfill their sensual desire. It make it worse and worse to do the same thing. That means they're never going to decide to go. Why not? You know, if I have what I want right now, is it that, and now some people say, if I have this and that and that, I would be fine, I would be satisfied. No, you won't. No. But then you have those things, you want more, you want something else, you want to add to it, to you know, become, you know, more attached to more things. The reason is, you're really longing for limitlessness, aren't we? You know, we're created to be limitless. But we are trying to replace that limitlessness with the desires of limited things in the external world. So we want to fulfill that limitlessness with something that's limited, and it's never going to happen, and never going to work. Okay. So the best thing is to close your eyes and to start meditating. Have ignorance with your process. It's directing that energy, that want, that desire, from external world, from sensual things, to the internal world and godly thing. Okay? Fulfill your desires for sensual things according to God's law. Okay? Sexual desire can be fulfilled through nice marriage, nice couples. Okay? Come together and create children and family and at the same time make it godly. It's not the sensual desire is not important in the relationship, but godly setup of creating community and creating the family and creating an environment that it's good for everyone, therefore make it godly. Food, you know, live in a community of light, okay? Cook beautiful food together and share and eat it together and enjoy it. At the same time, it's not, you know, something that it's going to become a heedless desire that it's become completely unfulfillable. So we can see, God doesn't say don't use the external world. God says make it godly, make it spiritual. And when you make it spiritual, you have more time also to direct the energy from the external world to the internal world, to the higher mental world, and make that great will for progress in your spiritual life. Okay? So we can see that how we can use the energy, where is our focus is affecting our life and our progress to the higher thing. Of course, if you read the Universal Man, continue reading it, probably it shows a little bit how the energy is externalized, it's become hideous desires. And the same energy, actually you can just look at the atomic energy. You can use the atomic energy for the good thing, grow things and bring beautiful things to Earth, to humanity. You also can use atomic energy to pollute the whole Earth 50 times. It's the same energy. It's the same prana. It's the same thing. You can direct it externally. The energy becomes desires and attachments and temptation. You internalize it, become wisdom, higher path, and progress. So you can see that is why in Dhok it says, when the prana goes outwardly, it becomes desires and it is desires and you never going to be fulfilled. So that's why in meditation we say, close your eyes. Go through it. When you have a desire for the external world, meditate on it. What's going to happen? Okay, I want this. And I want it then. And I want it now. And I want it for myself. And I don't want to share it either. Alright, go ahead. Close your eyes, meditate. Okay, you got it. Now what? That was good. A lot of people, you know, desire to have companionship. Okay? Be with people. Be with other people. If I buy a nice house and have a lot of money, I'm going to have a lot of friends. And they gain those things. Actually, they lose a lot of friends and a lot of things. But they come to a study. Okay? So you see, exactly the things you gain to fulfill other desires sometimes actually backfire. So that is when you close your eyes, you go through it, and you create your wisdom in your meditation, and you realize, not really, I don't want that, but that's not gonna, you know, help me in my spirit progress and higher things. So internalize your energy, bring it back from the world into yourself, and meditate on it, and if you have a desire, go through it through your meditation. That is a tantric way of fulfilling your desire without side effects of going externally. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Patricia.
All right. Next question.
In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 1, Arjuna asks, what are the oversoul, overbeing, and over divinity? I could not understand Krishna's answer. Can you explain these things and how they relate to the mission's teaching? I'm going to read that verse from Shreya. Who is Brahman? Who is Atman? And what is karma, spirit supreme? What is the kingdom of the earth? And what is the kingdom of light? Who offers the sacrifice in the body? How is the offering made? And when the time to go comes, how do those whose soul is in harmony know thee?
So, as you can see here, it's not talking about the oversoul and all that in your question. It talks about the Atman and Supreme and Karma. So, it really is talking about who is God, what is self, and how the karma works, you know, here. So Supreme or Brahma is God himself. That we believe that it is the consciousness and the three gunas in the universe, and it's everywhere and all over the universe. And the two levels of God's in manifested way, manifested state, and in an unmanifested state. In unmanifested state is absolutely in a blissful state of being, and in a manifested state is in the higher mental world, or the sixth chakra, which is also engaged into managing the universe. So that is what Supreme is. Brahma is. That means that the God that has control of the universe and is within every individual, then he is within every individual, that becomes Atman or Self. Okay. So the Supreme is Brahman, the God in the manifested world. He is in control of everything. He is the one that knows the smallest fish in the ocean and what he's doing, what's going to eat, and what's going to happen to him or her. And self, or oversoul, is Atman. This is in us, in every one of us. This is the same as Brahman, or God himself. Okay? So, and karma is action, or the force in the universe that we use to manifesting or do things, and because of that we create a new reaction in our soul, and that reaction is the samskara that stays with our soul, and because of our action we create the reaction, which becomes the law of karma. So we have, if we do an action that is not according to the God of the universe, we are going against, law of the universe, we are going against the law, So we create karma, which we have to learn the lesson not to go against the law of the universe. So these things are what Krishna goes on to answer the Arjuna in the whole that chapter about, you know, how the self is the same as God, the Atman is the same as Atman. Atman with the small h is the same as Atman. The self with the small s is the self with the big s. And that very well goes with the other scriptures. Know thyself to know God. Okay. For in every culture they say, no, say that. Know thyself to know God. Why? Why knowing self is equal to knowing God? Because self is what? It's God. If you know self, if you know yourself, what do you know? You know the self which is the same as God, so you know God. So we can see that if the scriptures again here talking about the same thing, there is no difference between the scriptures and God's revelation. So we can see that the scriptures say the same thing, self is the self, and God and Atman are one. Know thyself, know God, and do the actions which according to the God's laws, which according to the universal setup. Okay. And Ten Commandments is a part of the universal setup. The 15 Commandments is part of the universal setup. Not going against the things that is said is not according to the universal laws, make us more godly, more in control, greater will power, okay, in our lives. You know, the more we become, as we just talking about, the more we become heedless, you know, and attracted to the Maya, the less we're gonna follow the godly way, the less we're gonna follow the laws of the universe. The less we follow the laws of the universe, the more we are gonna be out of control and unhappy and destroyed. So that is what this Krishna is and Arjuna are talking about in this chapter. It's talking about God, self, and how the self creates karma, and how karma affects the individual, and how with following the laws of the universe are gonna bring human in a greater degree knowing self and God. So, and that is very well goes with the mission's teaching too. That we believe that God is everything, and the self is a part of God, and knowing thyself is knowing God. But we say, knowing thyself is accelerated in the communities of light. Okay, you do not recommend to go to the mountain and isolate yourself from the rest of the universe so you can know thyself. Actually, we believe that the communities of light accelerates the process more than going to the mountain and meditating by yourself. So in that sense, you know, our teaching is different than Hinduism that teaches, you know, separate yourself, or at least the follower of the teacher. I don't think the teaching was what I heard that in the beginning. The follower of the teacher, they go and then they live in a forest and some of them naked and eat, you know, just bird food and try to, you know, deny everything, deny their body, deny their, you know, senses absolutely, and maybe they can know themselves. And how many of them do? We find out not really, you know, working. So that's not working. And if you're completely attracted to the world and go to the external world, you will see that's not going to work either. So what works? Middle path. What's middle path? Comes of life. Comes of life is the middle path. You know, reasonably are satisfied your physiological need, but you have to withdraw from external world and your desires that you have so much, you know, you think they're normal, but they're not. So you can just withdraw from those things that are not, you know, recommended, and more you know thyself. Okay? And that the more you know the Atman, the more you know God. So the mission actually is very much related to the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, if you read the Bhagavad Gita and then you read the Bible, the New Testament, you see the similarity of what Krishna was talking about and what Christ is saying. It's very similar to each other. And of course, we know that Christ went to Persia and India and Tibet, and probably he was familiar, very familiar with the, you know, Bhagavad Gita and his teachings and the relationship between God and Atman. So when he came back to the Jerusalem, you know, he wasn't just a regular Jew, but he was also a mystical, you know, person that he had all this knowledge with him. And then he says, I am God, or me and Father are one. He really says, Atman and Atman are the same thing. Me, myself, and God are the same thing. So you can see that in his teaching, he shows that he is aware of the mystical part and the teaching of the Hinduism and all that. Of course, he also knew about the teaching of the Judaism and the Old Testament. So he was not only knew about Hinduism, he also knew about other teaching too. So and also, of course, he was the Messiah, and he came to further the teaching to a greater degree. So now we also believing in this same thing, that the self and God are the same thing. Know thyself, be still, and know that I am God. And God is everything, and that is the supreme. And we are self or Atman, and we can know him by knowing ourselves. And we don't believe in karma, although we teach and explain it a little differently. We don't believe that karma is something set and it's gonna, you know, bother you for the many, many lifetimes. We believe after you learn your lesson, the karma is gonna go away and you're gonna be fine. Okay? So the karma is there for you to learn a lesson. When you learn a lesson, there is no karma left. So Bhagavad Gita is a beautiful book. It has a lot of truth and wonderful thing. But I find that some parts of it seems to be influenced and changed, you know, with the human interference. Okay. That's why I started writing a commentary on it, and I wrote a commentary for 3 chapters, and then I reached a point that I realized that's not really true. The things in it, you know, has been, you know, changed and influenced with some kind of mind.
About caste
system. So even when you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, read it with a grain of salt. And again, compare it to dough. The whole thing comes again back to is what it says is in dough or not. Because we don't believe there is really a caste system as this person is untouchable. Because he goes on talking about untouchable and all that. So, but the rest of them, there is a lot of beautiful teaching, and we can use them, you know, in our realization of what Do is talking about when you say meditate, awakening of spiritual forces. What does it mean, awakening of spiritual forces? You can find a lot of that in Bhagavad Gita. You can find a lot of that in Upanishad and other Indian, you know, philosophy or Buddhist philosophy or any mystical other mystical path about how to know thyself. But always, always be careful. Always take them with a grain of salt and compare it with dough. Is it really in the dough or not? And hopefully we don't create caste system. And because we do also talk about the you know, Kachins and Shudras and Brahmins and all that, but it should not become a base for the caste system and all that.
And so it says that in the beginning the operative powers of the three gunas were not released. Does this mean that in the beginning the universe did not have the capacities of creativity, knowledge, ability, and remembrance?
Very good question. That is a it had the potential of creativity, but it didn't have the memory ability to do or make a decision. It's a state of Venus, a state of absolute equilibrium and balance. And that state is that a state of blissfulness and just being without, the kind of awareness we are talking about in the external world. It's a state of unexplainable, of being, and no desires left even, to want to do anything, or create anything. Or that's why in Hinduism they say the cycle of creation is creation and Brahma then goes to sleep. Okay, just like a desire, the creation collapses, and Brahma goes to sleep. In the state of sleep, you have the ability of being creative? Yes, you are. You have the ability of memory? Yes, you do. But you're not using it. It's just like in a dormant state of being. You have the potential. For instance, if a stone at the top of a mountain is over there, sitting at the top of the mountain, it's a potential energy. If you push that stone down the hill in the mountain, it becomes very powerful. If anything in front of it, it's going to just smash it to nothingness. But as far as stone is at the top of the mountain and it's not falling and going nowhere, it's just like it's like dormant. It doesn't have any potential of doing any harm or anything. It's just sitting there. It's the same state of being that it has the potential of being awakened, it has the potential of the creation and creativity and being able to, make decisions, remembering and creating the universe. But it doesn't want to. it just doesn't even have a desire. Actually, there is no desire in it. Like that's a state of desirelessness. Okay, if there is no desire, how can you create? You have to have a desire to create a car before you start figuring out how to create a car. If you don't have any desire to create a car, are you going to become a car maker? If you have a desire to paint something, the desire first comes, and then you say, I have to go buy the brush, to buy the paint. Now what kind of subject I want to paint? You put the effort to it. If you don't have any desire to paint, do you paint? No. Do you have the ability to paint? Of course you do. You can buy, anybody can buy brush and paint. Of course you might not paint as good as Michelangelo or Picasso, but you can paint. You have the ability. You have the potential to do it, but there is no desire to do it, therefore it's not going to happen. It's the same thing, when eventually this creation reaches a point that the original energy is exhausted, it goes back to that state of desirelessness. And remember what created the universe. The first reason for creation is the desire arises in the consciousness of the universe, and that desire brings imbalance to the whole equilibrium in the universe and makes the Big Bang or the beginning of the... So the whole reason for creation is based on that original desire. Okay? And that's exactly what the make human deathless is desire, isn't it? They have desire for this, they have desire for that, they have desire for... and that's why they keep them going toward the Maya, because the desire awakens them, more potential in them to go to the Maya. So creation, the first thing was created was I know. Before that, he didn't have to know. You know, he didn't have any desire to know. You know, he didn't need to know. He was just a state of absolute bliss and beingness and equilibrium, so he didn't have to know. Yeah. And then the next one is, I do. In that state before that, there was no desire to do. It was absolutely desireless of wanting to do anything. And then, of course, then the creation goes to, you know, to create the manifestation of the ether, which become memory, then an action. Then it says, oh, I remember, I just have work. Or I have the memory of, you know, of I'm being here, I have the ability, I have the creativity, I have the desire, I have the whole universe is sort of going away and away from that equilibrium state to more and more toward the and become more mundane and gross and creation and the universe. And suddenly the whole universe is created, and that desire, of course, created many different consciousnesses. Every consciousness had their own desire and their own wants, and it started splitting to uncountable, you know, number of the unit consciousnesses, and created what? Created chaos. That's why the Bible says in the beginning, the darkness was in the, you know, on the deep, and then the spirit of God moved, you know, over the water. It was the darkness. Darkness is chaos. It's something that is not controllable. The light is not there anymore. It became so gross and so desirous and so away from equilibrium that the light absolutely lost its, you know, original being and became what? Darkness. So before that, that being even didn't aware what darkness is. But in the beginning he realized that there's a darkness, there's a chaos, there's something wrong with this, you know, picture. Yeah. Therefore it moves to bring the thing under control again. And of course he realized that helping each unit consciousness back to their body, it was a hard work. You know, they wouldn't listen, they wouldn't, you know, they had their own ideas. Just look at the earth, you know, each individual has their own wills and desires and wants, and they want to go their own way and do their things for their own way, and they wanted to do it. And God has been sending, you know, prophets and the, you know, revelations, and all of them say the same thing: turn around, be baptized, forget about the world, come back to me. How many people are listening to them? Those people say, yes, we want to listen. They even, you know, turn around and go back to the world, and the world gets them because of their desires and wants and all that. So, in meditation is also, if you become more and more less desires for external world, and more become that equilibrium without wanting to reach too much of Maya and be completely, you know, destroyed by it. When the Maya comes and our desires arise and we go to our desires, the desires become less important. You turn back home, become less important because you have a lot of things to go, do right now, and going home is not your priority. You know, doing other things are more priority. And of course, the eventual conclusion was if you create a nice environment for people that encourage them to go back home more and more, is going to help. That's what the idea of the communist of life comes in. Okay. So if you want to have a kind of spiritual process by yourself, you want to go home by yourself, it is what? It is harder. because an ocean of Maya is going to just grab you and say, no, you can't do it. You know, you're wrong. You're the only person. You know, you don't have any other person thinking like you or supporting you. But the Compass of Life creates an environment of support for those who want to go back home. Okay. That's what actually the purpose of the Compass of Life is, create an environment that everybody can progress physically, mentally, and spiritually, and going home. if you're in the community and you are trying to get the community to the Maya and bring Mayistic into it, you're not part of Communist of Life. You're opposing the community to go where it's supposed to go. So, and then of course, in the creating such environment, you know, you have to sacrifice. You can't say, what is it in for me only and what is it in for me? And if you do that, then you are going to feel, you know, out of the community. You're not connected with the community. You're not going to be part of the community. The community must reject you. You might reject the community. And eventually you say, well, this is not going to work for me. I'm going to eventually, again, you're going to fall into Maya. But when you're in the community, you can easily turn around and go toward God in a spiritual progress. You know, of course, the next step is, you know, do the will of God. What is the will of God for me? What have I created here for? You know, not my will, but your will. If you say, oh, no, I don't agree with God's will, that's okay if God wants it this way, but my will is different than God's will. So what are you saying? You're saying you don't want to listen to God's will. You want to listen to your own will. Of course, this can be misused. You know? Some teacher might come here and say, this is the will of God, but really it's the will of the teacher. So that's why many religions have created. A lot of teachers in those religions brought their will into that religion and presented that as the will of God. Just like a Brahmin said, what? That there's going to be caste system, there's going to, these people I don't like, they're untouchable. Okay? And in Judaism, you know, the rabbi became the head of the community, and rabbi said, this is the way he is. So the Jewish people said, yeah, that is the will of God. But really, it wasn't the will of God. But in Christianity, fathers and brothers said the way he is, and then Christians said, oh, okay, that's the way it is. That's the will of God. Or in Muslim, you know, mullahs came and they said, people, this is the way it should be. But that's not what Muhammad said or what God said. So we can see it can be misused, you know, that following the will of God. So what is the mission with the will of God? In the mission, the will of God is the eternal divine path. It's very simple. The rest of it is really the cream on the cake. The cream, icing on the cake. The rest is to bring you to this realization that the goal of your life is to follow eternal divine path, and that is the will of God. So you can make your resolution. And then, of course, you have to become universal. You can't just say, oh no, I love God, but I don't like this race or that gender or this part of the universe. Or you can't do that because God is everything. How can you? There is a purpose for everything God created. He wouldn't create them if there is no purpose for them. Okay. So that is when you gather all the knowledge of the mind and free yourself from all those problems. So, but what is the goal of all those things? To go back home. To return to equilibrium. To return of desirelessness. To bring the universe back to that state. But that state doesn't mean that it didn't have the potential of being created. It has the potential, but the potential is dormant. There is no desire to create. There is no desire to be awakened. There is no desire to know. There is no desire to remember. There is no desire to be anything else but in that state of absolute absorption into self and oneness with the rest of the universe. So we cannot say that it didn't have any creative force or it wasn't there, because there still is going to be consciousness and the tribuna. But the tribuna is in a equilibrium level and consciousness is absolutely free. It has the potential, but it doesn't have the desire to do anything with it. So, in that one sense, you're correct. Before the creation, there was no memory, there was no action, and there was no decision-making process. But it was in a state of beingness, to be. You know, we can go back to Shakespeare, to be or not to be. That is the question. Okay. If you are, that means you are right there. In the moment, that's what some teacher said, the same come, then you are in the moment. You are in this second, neither in the back, past, neither in the future. What's happening right now, here and now, is that moment of the, but the moment you say here and now, what happens? That here and now is past, it's gone, you're not there anymore. So the only way you can recognize and realize that the state before the creation is to be that state. And the only way you can get to that state is through your meditation. Okay? It's an infinity. You know, you cannot record infinity until you experience infinity. Then you don't question it, you know it exists. But intellectually it's impossible to explain it. Okay? That's why many gurus, many teachers, many people try to explain what God is. Or what pure consciousness is. That's what most of them say. It is a state of unexplainable. A state means what? A state means it exists. It is a being. It's there. But I cannot explain it to you unless you experience it. And the moment you experience it, you know it's true, but you cannot explain it to another person. Okay, it's a state of unexplainable. Okay. And so it's that's what God, the only thing God can do is give you the path, the way to go there, the way to reach that state. Okay? It's up to you to go there to reach that state. Okay? But according to our teaching, don't hurry. You know? It's going to be harder for you to do it by yourself, even if you do it by yourself. What is the goal of the universe? To bring the whole equilibrium back to where it was. If you try to get there by yourself, do you think God is going to say, it's okay, come in? And he said, no, go back, you have a lot of work to do. All these unit consciousnesses are out there, they are lost. Come, go back and help them out. You're going to come back after, you know, you got a lot of people back to their state. So the whole goal of the universe is to back to the state it was, to come desirelessness, that state of desirelessness. So that is what this creation is creating, and that's what we have to teach the humanity, that they have to create the comings of life, so we can create less desireful people, and great teachers and great beings that they like to spend their time and energy to help others, so we should all the universe go back where it was before as fast as possible. So that's the goal of the life, to return to God. And every religion, every great teacher says the same thing. Your goal is to return to Father, to God, and become one with Him. But that doesn't mean that when you return, you don't have the potential to come back or create another creation. Does that make sense?
Yes, sorry, that makes sense, but I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead, John.
Why was the original desire release of Raja Guna? Why was that done?
Yeah, well, it is the universal mind. It is mind. It is the... it has a potential of desiring, okay? So as far as there is a potential of something, it might happen. Okay, if that stone at the top of the mountain has a potential of falling and making a lot of destruction, or Mount St. Helens can blow up and destroy all the mountain around it, as far as the potential is not release, as well as the Mount St. Helens and the power inside it was contained, nothing would have happened. Everything would be there. But the moment the pressure comes to the point that it cannot contain anymore, suddenly the mountain blows up. So just imagine that Mount St. Helens before blowing up is like a consciousness in a state of desirelessness, but somehow the pressure goes to a point that someone kind of blows up. The potential is released and destruction comes. Now imagine that the state of desirelessness exists for billions and trillions of years, and suddenly it reaches the point that the potential of desiring is released or awakened. And the moment that happens, the new creation is going to start. The desire is so strong that consciousness has no choice but release it. And that release of the desire creates a new cycle on this, that part that has been released realizes that he doesn't want to have that desire anymore, and the whole universe again becomes desireless to return where it was before. So because there is a potential, if there is a potential is in anything, there is a possibility that it will eventually go out of equilibrium and use that potential and create a situation for fulfilling that desire. Does that make sense?
Mind shifting.
Yeah, it's mind stretching, yes.
Maitreya, that desire though was a godly desire, right? To help all the lost unit consciousnesses, not like a heedless desire, is that correct?
Well, that is the real question, what was that first desire? Okay, and that is that we have to go to the beginning of the, so what was desire was.
And the question is, if you overcome, you know, you can picture a point where you overcome an attachment in your desires, does that mean that there might be a desire that comes up again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, even if you have become desireless, okay, the only thing you are doing is you are realizing that desire are no good. So that is a kind of a realization that kind of a diffuses your desire. It's not something that you cannot desire. You know, even the greatest yogi or the greatest realized person, they can awake the desire and become the person with the full of desires, but they won't do it because they know desire is not good for them. It is something that they have not destroyed, but something that they have diffused. And brought an equilibrium in their being. So if that equilibrium is changes and goes out of the that equilibrium, you know, it can. Even there are some examples of the spiritual teachers who fell. Okay, and they start something with a good idea, with a good intention, and later on some of the, you know, preacher last couple of years, you know, probably they start with a good intention, and then later on we find them, you know, in bad situations that, you know, shows that there still was some impurity. So they had the potential. In the beginning they were more equilibrium, but they had the potential to fall and they failed. Maybe.
If you're trying to achieve desirelessness, wouldn't you have a desire to have no desires?
All right, that is another mind stretching question. Desire of not being actually, you do not desire to become desireless, but you meditate on your desire and go through them, or realizing them that they are not good, and that by itself, okay, make you desireless, okay, because you realize what you're going to do is not going to get where you want to go or progress or be, and it's not good, so you just let it go, okay? And also it depends, you know, how clean your chakras are, okay? The more you meditate and you purify and you clean yourself, the desire dissolve by themselves, you know, they as we talk about the little creatures, if you put the lights on them for a long time, they just completely become, you know, destroyed by themselves. So really there is no desire of being desireless, but you go through the process and desire falls off by itself. Maybe the first desire was to create. Okay. That is a question I probably have meditated for a long time to come up. What was the original desire that arose in the universe to for the first time that state of absolute absorption, okay, lost its equilibrium somehow. Okay? And because it lost the equilibrium, the forces release, and those forces took over the consciousness, and for the first time the desire was, maybe the first desire was, I'm too lonely. Okay. Or am I here only by myself? Or who am I? What am I doing here? Or somehow you can even say maybe it wasn't the beginning, wasn't the first desire, but the disturbance of equilibrium in the universe. And because that equilibrium fell, the first consciousness started getting crucified with the forces, and it started snowballing and affecting. And eventually leads to awakening of, oh, I know, I do, I have done, and creation. But at the same time, the consciousness realized that he has the ability to control it and bring it back where it used to be. So those questions and going back to the beginning of the creation is really mind-stretching questions, and they're good to think about them and meditate and try to figure out, but you have to go to the beginning of the creation to see what was that desire. And as I said, and probably, most probably, the equilibrium was restored and then the desires arose.
Well, I also had a question about creativity. Where does that come from? I think when you look in the animal world, it seems like humans are the only one that seems to have that incredible intention. Is it a desire to create, to make things? You don't see it really in any other animals, and chimpanzees or monkeys, you don't see them, you see them doing a little bit, but not like the human. Is that a part of us that's similar, you know, we are made in the image of God, and God created, and that's from us? Is it a chakra thing? Is it a lower chakra? Is it a higher chakra? Is it a desire?
Okay. I don't think animals are absolutely void of creativity. They do have creativity in them, but probably it's not as expanded as human creativity. And actually in Islam, this Prophet Muhammad said, when God created human, he said, Tabarakallah ahsan al-khalaq. Congratulation, the highest congratulation of his creation. It means it is the crown of his creation. It was the crown of what he eventually accomplished. Okay? But creating man, because man is the only being who is in the image of God. Okay? You cannot see that the Bible says that dog is in the image of God, or the cat is in the image of God, or even horse, or, you know, what's the smartest animal? Even chimpanzee or is in the image of God, but it says man is in the image of God. So, in a sense, we are created, you know, the most potent, you know, being on the, at least the creation we are aware of, okay? And we have the potential to become godly and have a God consciousness in them. And as he said, God has the potential of creating. He has the ability to be very creative. Okay? So if we are in his image, therefore we have a lot of potential to create and be created. Okay? And we actually be a co-creator of God and a creating that, you know, God, and you know, be very proud of, you know, what we have done. And we have, you know, there's no other animal, there's no other being that, at least as far as we know, that has accomplished on earth as human has. And we have accomplishing many levels, you know, in intellectual and physical and mental, and in the spiritual level, they have, you know, brought a lot of creativity to the earth and our environment, and they're probably the most successful animal, if you look at Lucas as part of the animal kingdom, on earth. So we should have something very special on us that we are able to do things that other animals don't have or cannot accomplish, and we do. We have the potential of being in one with God and in His God, especially before we split into male and female. So probably we are even more potential before God split man and woman, or male and female, into two parts. And now we become more potential if we realize that we are a part of each other, and bring that creativity together as a collective, you know, being on earth, and instead of fighting with each other and seeing the separation among ourselves, but seeing the collectivity and completeness and complementary things that we are all together, and how we can complete and make ourselves more perfect by realizing that we are part of the greater body, and the potential of creativity is going to be amazingly, you know, higher than human ever, you know, experienced or have seen. So we haven't really realized our potential yet. Okay? We have been individuals that have been very creative, and in our creativity very, very separated from the collective help of everybody else. Now, if we can overcome that and see the unity on earth and humanity and the whole thing here, okay, now we can see that our creative energy is not even, you know, net 1/10% of what it could be. So we still have a long way to go to really manifest, you know, what God has created in us. And probably, who knows, maybe we can come to a point that create a machine that people can just sit in underneath and they go to pure consciousness right away. You know, just healing the, you know, chakras and, you know, make them, you know, right go to the higher self and realize God in a way of a very much faster way. And just like we made the coffee, instant coffee, instead of brewing it, you have that instant realization to the higher self and all that. So we can be very creative, human has a lot of potential. We are even using, you know, 8 to 10% of our brain. What happened to that 90%? No. 90% is still dormant. We haven't been using it very well. We didn't make that to 25-30% of our brain. You know, are we really only this physical body, that, or are we going to progress in a greater degree to a more, you know, glorified body or thing? But this is the beginning of the great thing for humanity to come to. And so it is not the end at all. We are not a fatalistic, you know, teaching mission at all. We are not the end at all. We are the beginning of the release of the great, you know, potential for humanity. And each of us are a part of it to bring it to that point. But as far as humans are separated, they're fighting each other, they're, you know, destroying each other, they're so narrow in their understanding of the universe, and just as they said, we don't have enough, you know, resources. It's just laughable. How can you not have enough resources? There's infinite resources in the universe out there waiting for human to, you know, tap into. You know? But we are so narrow in our vision that we just see just like oil or you know, electricity created by, you know, atomic, you know, reactor or something like that. There's infinite energy out there. It reminds me of a bird that it sits in front of the ocean and very poor large air lake, and he doesn't drink the water of the lake, and the reason is that if she's afraid that if she drinks, the lake might, you know, dry out. She dies of this thirst, you know, because she's afraid if she drinks, the lake might dry out. But if she had the vision, she knows that the water is going to come back from the sky and it's going to rain, the lake is never going to dry out, and she can drink with, you know, in her heart content. So, you can see that when the vision is small, then our vision becomes very small, we will suffer. That's what one of the teaching is, your ideology and goal is very important in your life, and that's really is your vision. Your vision should be expanded. We are here trying to create a new man, a new society, a new human. You know, don't get your vision to, oh, I'm going to work and this is what it is and I'm terrible in this work and I'm all stuck here. And no, you're helping to create a new man, a new society. All of us in a greater vision here that we have to bring to humanity, to expand them, to get them off their small visions, which is bringing so much destruction to humanity, and they're destroying each other and fighting and, you know, bombing each other and, you know, and all that. If they can expand their consciousness, then they don't see each other as enemy, they see as a potential, you know, complementary part of the human race. So they have to stitch up, you know, vision, they have to stitch up being, work on ourselves, but at the same time know that we are a part of a greater, you know, thing that has been come to humanity. And the human is in the brink of it, breaking to a great, you know, release of their potential. Okay. But as far as we are concentrating only on earth, only on race, only on our religion, only on our, you know, nation, nationality, you know, or culture, or then we're going to be on each other's throats for another 100, 200, or 1,000 years. Okay. And that's what God sent this mission. God sent this vision. Give it to humanity. Let them expand their vision. Let them expand their, you know, view. Let them come to see that they're not, you know, contradictory to each other, they're complementary to each other. His culture has something to offer. His culture is beautiful. His culture has, you know, to, you know, enrich my culture. You know, instead of saying, oh no, I want my culture, I don't want your culture is bad, you're no good, you know, you're inferior to me and I'm gonna, you know, bomb you or destroy you or, you know, cleansing means, you know, means they're dirty or something. There's something wrong with them that I have to cleanse them or something out of my. But that kind of thinking, it means a narrow vision, a tunnel vision. You have not expanded your vision to see, oh, maybe they have something good I can use. You know, maybe I can look a little deeper. No, they have something that enriches in my culture in a greater degree. So that with this realization, we can overcome our fears, our desires, our feeling of inferiority, or get stuck in a small place and realize, oh, wow, I'm doing a great thing here. You know, I am bringing humanity to the release of the great energy. And as we create more and more conditions of life, of course, you know, that mundanity should also be left out from all of us, which are stuck in working or being in a small place of, you know, society, feeling nobody and nothing, you know, and being able to feel, yeah, I am doing a great thing here, and I am part of human progress and expansion of the vision. So I hope, you know, all of us, you know, expand our vision. That don't let the world get you. Let's door get you. Let's God get you. But not the world that tries to tell you are no good, you're small, you're nothing, and all that. You are great, you are doing a great job, and this vision is wonderful, and humanity has greater potential, and that's where they are at. That's what you have to teach, and that's what you have to awaken them into. And hundreds from now, if we can create many kinds of life and release this energy,
human is going to be somewhere that they have never even imagined
possible.
Just imagine what they did in the last 50 years. We can run horse and buggy through the space travel in 50 years. Means I was 7 years old when we started. So you can see that, you know, if he could have done that, you know, for all this problem he's having on Earth, imagine what we can do if we don't have this problem on Earth. And the energy is going toward the progress in physiological and safety and spiritual progress. After a while, we know a kid from the very childhood, you know, what is that good at? What is the potential? How can we can, you know, nurture that in that? Every child on Earth and in the universe, not only Earth, the whole universe, every child should have that ability to be nurtured and potential, his own potential is recognized and nurtured and bloom. And if you can do that, how many talented child are going to be out there and help the scientific mind or the spiritual mind or the physical mind or the legal progress or the, you know, physical or medical field and everything that we progress to this point. Medicine has gone to a point, you know, they have drugs that is really miraculous, you know, what they do. And they almost find cure for the, you know, cancer and all that, and all these things. First of all, you shouldn't get cancer in the first place, according to our teaching, you know, and in the comments of life, and diet, and meditation, and all that. So that should stop there, you know. For example, the yin and yang, that not some people call it, you know, acidity and alkaline. It's the same thing. The realization of the being in balance in our diet, you know, which is not very balanced in our diet here in the United States. We eat too much acid, that's everything. Coffee, meat, you know, lots of acidy food, and after a while, you know, we have acid body, and that is the base of the cancer. If you can go back to more alkaline and more balanced, or yin and yang balance, you know, they're going to have a greater health. So, humans have done a lot of progress, but they have a lot of more potential, and if we can give this message to humanity, each of us are a part of a great movement, which is not really a revolution, but is an evolution. We are evolutionary people. We are here to teach, and our teaching should hit their heart and make them desirous to be a part of us.
Lucia, I was talking to a lady, and she asked us about our path, and do you become perfect by following this path? I answered her, and now I think maybe my answer was wrong. I actually said no, and that's why I'm sharing this with you, because I want to make sure I learn from this whole situation so that if I was wrong, you know, that I can get it right in the future. I answered that because, for a couple of reasons, thinking that to become absolutely, absolutely perfect, I didn't feel maybe you could do that within the body, for one thing, because I understand that there's still some karma left, even in the highest being. The other reason is I knew that we couldn't become completely one, you know, as God is, which is everything, and He's perfect. There was another, but I guess I don't really remember what that was. So I'd like to hear your thinking on this, as far as clarifying my understanding of this for the future.
Yeah, well, if you get the point that you have a little karma left, you're pretty perfect. You know, if any standard of the human beings, you know, that they can compare you with a regular human, you're pretty much made it in a very good state of being. You're a person that, you know, your concentration and feeling and life is toward the creation of the dominance of light and I'm bringing other people to the path and awakening your spiritual forces and sacrificing and surrendering and submissive and becoming universal, you are pretty perfect person. Okay? You might have some karma left, you know, you have a son to get into the school and
getting to the point of the independence and release of the after the release, you know, who might have a wife that, you know, you live together and all, you know. But at the same time, you just think the secondary to your mission and what you have done. Actually, they are there for you and love you because you have a mission and all that. So if we can consider of being as perfect as you can and follow the eternal divine path, creation, brilliant forms of light, most human probably say, wow, this is pretty good, pretty high. Of course, if you reach a point, you become completely desireless and you have no karma left, you don't stay in your body, you go back to that state that it was. Okay, but again, according to our teaching, even you get there, God is not going to let you go in. Okay, you're going to go send you back and say, go back. You know, and that's why we are going to probably last people on the universe to enter that state, because we decided to come back and become a teacher, as a awakening of the spiritual people, awakening of the spiritual forces in other people, teaching this thing, and they can over and over. So, if the question is, if you're going to be perfect, you can say, you can get as perfect as possible in the body. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's essentially what I've said to her, that by following our path, you can become, you know, more and more perfect, but I guess I was saying that maybe you wouldn't become, you know, completely perfect. But I guess I felt like maybe she was asking, do we become like the Son of God, you know, that perfect, or
yeah,
something.
Yes, you do become Son of God, you know, actually. Being Son of God doesn't mean that you are not here. Actually, you become Son of God because if you reach a point that you reach true consciousness and you never return, you and God are one. There is no separation of God and the Son of God. Okay, but as far as you are in the body, you can be the Son of God and let the God come through you and do the perfect thing, and at the same time stay in the body and be a Son of God. So you do become Son of God, and you become almost as perfect as humanly possible. Okay. And so if the question is, do you become perfect?